The city cannot.
Goodness.
8:45 on the clock. We'll call to order the regular meeting of the Gates County Board of Supervisors. Stand in for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Open Meeting Act is posted on the southeast corner of the wall. Attendance by observation, Setzer, Byers, Lytle, Bauman, Dorn, Hill, Juergens. First on the agenda is a consent agenda. The consent agenda consists of the general agenda, approval of the minutes from the previous meeting held April 3rd, 2013, approval of all claims through April 17th, 2013, in the amount of $382,623.36, approval and place on file all correspondence received, approve Register of Deeds fee report for the month of March 2013. Approve Andrew Johansson as replacement for Randy Page as a member on the Engage board, and that's consistent with our agreement that we have. Approve utility permit 948 for the Lower Big Blue NRD to install a water line right away 029 in the southwest quarter of Section 29, Township 3 North, Range 7 East in Rockford Township. Approve utility permit 949 for the Lower Big Blue NRD to install a water line right away 030 in the north or southeast quarter of Section 33 and the southwest quarter of Section 34, Township 3 North, Range 7 East, Rockford Township. Approve utility permit 950, CDM Smith boring, soil boring right away 030 in the northwest quarter of the northeast quarter of Section 27, Township 4 North, Range 6 East, Midland Township. The northwest quarter of the northeast quarter. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Okay, I got it straight. All right, those are all the items on the consent agenda. You have a motion to approve or disapprove the consent agenda.
I would move to approve the consent agenda.
Moved by Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. Any discussion regarding those items? Seeing none, vote. 7-0 to approve the consent agenda. Next on the regular agenda is comments from the public and requests for future agenda items, not specific to items on the agenda. We'll discuss those later. We'll have an opportunity to talk if there's anything outside of that you'd like to visit about, comments about. Seeing none, we'll move to the committee reports, building and grounds.
Nothing.
Equalization.
Nothing.
Finance and insurance.
Some things that have come up. Got a proposal from Adams. Adams up there, the city of Adams, did approve to go ahead with their new fire barn. And as part of that, I know I've been visiting with everybody I could. Part of that, the county... Visiting with the county to make that wired for an emergency 911 center to be able to use it. And they have the proposals back to me, and I have those, and the proposals are for about $4,900. And just letting everybody know that so that, you know, that's we won't have that bill until later or whatever until that's all installed. We visited with Mark about the fact that all the telephone lines in there, they won't be usable, the ones that they're installing. They won't be usable for the general public. The Windstream coordinates that so that you can go up there and certain people know how to do it and they just flip them on or whatever and stuff. So I've been visiting about that and putting Mark has a used tower he bought somewhere here in the county and he's reserving that and visiting with them about putting that up there also. But also the reason I bring it up on the 22nd on Monday, but I'm not sure of the time, they're having groundbreaking ceremony up there at Adams. But you have to contact somebody up there to find out the time or whatever. Oh, and did you want me to talk a little bit about, well, I can talk about that at Engage or something. The Project North, we don't have that on the agenda this week. Do you want me to talk about that here? Project North, which is a proposal from a company that through Engage for the city and the county to each do a $75,000 three-year loan and stuff, that is not on this agenda. Last Thursday night, I went to a meeting of they have a citizens advisory group the city does for their LB 840 funds. And I went to that meeting, and the mayor and Tobias were there. And they have guidelines for their LB 840 funds that when that passed, they have to be met. And this company did not meet, did not have enough of the paperwork done. There were two things on their list of 8 or 10 guidelines. One of them was financial papers from one of the owners, and one was a business plan. They did not have those done as part of their project. So the Citizen Advisory Group could not recommend it to the city, so it's not on their agenda to approve. And through discussion Matt had with the mayor and everybody else, we decided not to put that on our agenda either and wait until conversations they'll have with Engage, and then we still have with the city and the county. It's not that the whole thing's done or not going to happen. It still could, but there's a process we need to follow, and we need to make sure that all gets done also or whatever. So, but that's why the Project North isn't on the agenda, and that company isn't named out here yet or whatever. So,
any more questions or comments, Myron? Law enforcement, emergency management?
Gus had a couple of things. I was hoping he'd be here to cover them a little bit more, but he's moving some things around over in the Sheriff's Department to make better use of the space they have. Pretty simple. It's not a real expensive deal. It's just a matter of moving things around. Last week they did, I believe, all the plumbing project that we had going. They got completed, and I believe they had everybody move back in, or they have working on getting them all moved back into the jail this week. So I guess that's the main things we had for law enforcement. Mark really didn't have a whole lot. We discussed the tower like Myron was talking, and continued work on the LEOP. Mr. Hawkins is getting along pretty well with that. He's met with most of the communities. He's been getting the info he needs and really moving along pretty good.
Yeah, Myron. One other comment. Yeah, Mark made mention of the tower down at Blue Springs, that has been on the county records as a 440-foot tower. They were installing new lights, right?
Yeah.
New lights on there.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, the tower's 485 feet. So they've got to change the registry and all of that on that tower because – for years, well, everybody, Mark said, everybody thought it was that height. Everybody, it's registered as that height. They had the cable for it. Cable is 40 foot short.
Yeah, so. And luckily the cable company is accepting the 440 back and getting us the length that we need. So for 50 years, it had been a 440 foot tower. Okay. Now we're going to have to re-register it with the FAA.
These guys
485.
At Wyme, where they're flying planes around. Yeah, you were 50 foot higher than you thought, so, yeah.
Hopefully you were,
yeah. Hopefully. That's just more interesting than anything I thought.
Yeah.
So. I'm going to apologize to Kathy. I skipped right over HR and employee relations. Sorry about that.
No report.
We're still working on the handbook. Did we get copies to everybody?
Not yet.
That updated one? I think it's pretty thick, so it's got all kinds of suggestions. She showed it. So... Kerry, Road and Bridge.
Wymore Bridge Project, we had an on-site meeting, Galen, Deborah, Mark Minnelli on 4-9 of 13. Proceeding with that, Philly Bridge Project, we will be meeting, or the negotiator will be meeting with the landowners probably next week sometime, so that's progressing. We talked briefly in our committee on concerning the highway department office space down the road, plans, what we could do to expand the office, what our plan would be. Bathrooms, as you probably remember, is a big issue in the shop. We've not really done anything with those yet. They're... it needed some repair, I guess we should say. So we're continuing to look at that, how we can make that more efficient down at the county barn. Last Thursday evening, we had a meeting with our Gage County employees from the county barn down there. We had very good attendance, a lot of discussion. Basically, our thoughts were to talk to the people that did the work, kind of what our plans were for the summer, you know, road projects, things that we had that we were thinking about, to let them get, I guess, the way I see it, a little firsthand knowledge before they read about it in the paper, so they kind of knew what was going on. So we tried to brief them briefly what our thoughts were, and also feedback from them where they thought improvements could be done, back and forth conversation. So in my estimation, it went real well. You know, it was well attended. Everybody got to say what they want, and we'll probably continue that, a yearly meeting for sure with the employees, because I think it's important. It makes just better relationships we build there. There's been some discussion, of course, Galen and some of the staff are gone to Kearney yesterday and today. They'll be returning this afternoon. Four people went, Galen, Deb, Rob Davis, and Rod Aiden, to a Pontus program, a mandatory training program provided by the state. They all left in one vehicle, rode together. The only thing we're out of is mileage. The state will reimburse us for the lodging and the meals. So it's a mandatory conference. It's a Pontus program that we're in, and they'll be returning this afternoon on that. So otherwise, Galen would have been here this morning with the motor grader bids in front of us now, but he'll be gone till after dinner. Basically, that's all I had, Myron.
One other thing on the notes here we had from the committee meeting that I wrote or whatever. Committee had some discussion on setback, and it should include in there for the non-participating dwellings on wind farms. And that's just because we went through the process with the wind farms. Is that a good amount, what we're doing, or not? And that's we directed Galen to talk to Nancy and then maybe the zoning board to have some discussion on that too or not. Not saying it's right or wrong what we're doing. It's just there was some discussion brought up by some people through the whole process on the wind farm. And I didn't include the word wind farm down there in about the fourth thing from the bottom. So if you're wondering what that comment was, that's what it was.
And I guess to follow up on that a little bit, that was something that I asked about. The setback on those wind turbines right now is a quarter mile from any dwelling. To me, if you're not in favor of or don't have one on your property, a quarter mile seems awful close to me to an existing house or dwelling if you're not participating in it. To me, it's something that I'd just like to have the Planning and Zoning Board look at and just put theirself in that spot and say, well, I want one of these a quarter mile from my house if I was ever put in that situation. Just for discussion, that's what the rules are right now. Looking to see if we could maybe changing that down the road sometime, because this could come in front of us again sometime.
Here?
Terry, I see on the notes here, discussion on trees along county roads. Deborah will bring a draft to committee. What's the thought there?
We've had complaints from various township officials as well as citizens. She sent out, I think, two or three letters to address complaints we've had from 2 to 3 weeks ago already, with the recommendation that they get back to us. You know, we've got a problem, an issue with these areas through these complaints. As of Monday, we had no response to any of these letters. If we don't get any response, we're going to proceed, I believe, and talk to Roger. We're going to try and draft something up through the county attorney's office that will put up maybe a little more bite into that problem. It's a problem, and it's really going to be addressed this year now. This time of year, leaves start on the trees. It's a concern that 95% of the people of the county take care of their trees on the right of way, which is the law. But it's a concern because the other 5%, I mean, there's been various letters sent. Nothing ever gets done. So that's the issue that we're up against, and we'll look into it.
Yeah. And where it came up, Deborah said, as far the weed or the weed person or whatever, they're required by law to put in the paper a notice, a weed notice that, you know, the statute says that you're required to, landowners are required to take care of the weeds. And we're going to have her come back with some kind of draft so that we can approve something and then send that out also for trees or whatever. I mean, this had to come in front of Roger and stuff too, but the conversation was that we want to put a notice out there in the paper also so that people are aware of that. Maybe there's misunderstanding between everybody or something and stuff. So,
yeah. There is a statutory scheme that we can follow as far as through our office to the point where if we have to, we have to charge them and they can come meet Judge Tim about cutting their trees, and hopefully it won't come to that. But
we've dealt with that in the past, and so
very seldom we have to. Usually a letter, reminder, and
901, we're a minute late on our timed item to accept, reject, and or award bid for motor grader. So I need a motion to accept or close all bids. Accepting all bids, please.
So moved.
Moved by Hill.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle to close bids. Vote 7-0. All bids are closed. I'll send these down. We'll run left here. And since Galen's not here, what we'll do is when we go through these, we'll refer these to Galen. We'll actually take action in 2 weeks because we want to make sure that he looks at those and they're consistent. And it's because he's at that conference and just do the time.
In here someplace. Okay. Okay, we have a bid first from the Nebraska Machinery Caterpillar dealer for a machine as it's spec'd out. Total net machine bid with trade, $169,920. Next one is from the John Deere dealer. Total net machinery bid with trade, $163,600. $163,600. As Matt spoke to earlier, because Galen's absence today, we will refer these to Galen's office and review the specs and everything, what we're getting from both dealers, and we'll come back with a recommendation in 2 weeks.
I'll accept a motion to refer these to the highway superintendent for referral and action in 2 weeks. A motion.
Motion.
By Dorn.
I make a motion to refer this action in 2 weeks upon further review from Galen.
Will that be a second?
That'd be a second.
Okay. Thank you. Any further discussion?
And just for a reminder, I guess, the main reason we're doing the motor grader now is in our budget we had money budgeted for equipment purchase in there, and a couple months ago we approved the dump truck, but the dump truck will not come for delivery until August, so that will not be paid until after August, so that flows into the following budget year, not this budget year. Next year we knew that it was time, or we would probably budget for a motor grader, next year. So we're pushing that up to this year and putting that in this year's budget because of the money allocated for it. And then next year we'll have to deal with the dump truck in the budget.
Okay. Any discussion? Vote 7-0. Come back in 2 weeks. Thank you to Nebraska Machine and John Deere for the bids. Thank you.
Same time.
9 o'clock. We'll do we have anything else? We'll notify you of the time. If it's different, we'll plan on 9. Plan on 9. We'll let you know if it's different. Sometimes Dawn throws other things in there.
Thank you.
9 o'clock will work.
9 o'clock will work. Okay. Plan on 9. All right. We've got about 9 minutes to our next timed item. Let's go through here. I need a motion to approve or disapprove resolution on to signing of a program agreement for a 2013 fracture critical bridge inspections project, STP NBIS 99.
Make a motion to approve.
Moved by Juergens.
Second.
Seconded by Byers. Discussion. Terry, can you speak to that a little
bit? This is basically an agreement with the state concerning our bridges inspections, and it's something that's, I think, redid yearly, I think. And it's just something that it allows the state to inspect our local bridges to make sure that they're in the condition that they deem to be necessary, the larger bridges.
And this will not be any cost to the county because our share, the county's share, was going to be $23,273, which we get to use. We can still use our soft match funds from the state to cover our share of the cost. The total cost for the county, Gage County, for this HNTB Corporation to do the consultant is $116,000. But our cost share out of that will come out of a soft match, so this doesn't cost the county.
And Galen's going to get us a balance on our soft match because we've used that through different projects, and at this point we don't have any participating projects that would continue to fund that, so we're drawing
except
that
Wymore,
out.
Yeah. Except Wymore. The Wymore Bridge project, we use soft match funds too, but we don't remember the exact amount. We know we're over $300,000 on the soft match that we have in that fund.
And we have to do this. We can't not do this. So
no. We're required to do the bridge inspection.
This is actually a funded mandate. You don't hear that very often. Using soft match.
Unusual.
Funded mandate. Yeah. But it was because of the work we had done in the past and following the rules and regulations that we were able to build up that soft match money. So. Okay. So I have a motion and a second. We've had discussion. Any further discussion? Seeing none. Vote. 7-0 to approve signing of that resolution for the bridge inspections. Let's see, got a couple. That's all I had was fracture critical here.
Here's agreement, and then we have to do the resolution.
Oh, so this should time that. Okay, so I need a motion to approve or disapprove the agreement between Gage County and the Nebraska Department of Roads for the consulting inspection and load re-rating on fracture critical bridges project STP NBIS 99.
So move.
Moved by Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Setzer. And this is in conjunction with the program we talked about below. Any more discussion? Seeing none, vote. 7-0 to approve. A couple of minutes here. Let's approve or disapprove amending the agreement between Gage, the city and Gage County and Engage. Motion to approve or disapprove.
Motion to approve.
Moved by Dorn.
Second.
Seconded by Byers. Speak to this a little bit.
I believe this is on the financials, and in the original agreement we had, the financials needed to be turned into the county and the city by the 10th of the month. Well, the auditor, back up a second, our Engage meetings were held on the third day, I believe, which is after the 10th of the month, and the Engage board, the auditor is getting, they will have the information to us before the 10th. to the Engage board, but the Engage board would like to review those and make sure they're all okay before they go on to the city and the county. And that's why this agreement is amended, so that when they approve it at their meeting on the third Thursday, right after that, then it'll come up here.
I think we talked about this maybe three or four meetings ago, that would come, and I believe you had a conversation with Tobias from the city,
yeah,
because it is a joint agreement, so we don't have two agreements,
right.
We have one agreement.
So. No, the city, they had a lot of discussion with Tobias, and that's proposal between Andy, Tobias, and everybody. This came out of that, and we're more than fine with it. It's just that the Engage board really would have, some of them on there really would like to look at the financials in case there's something not right that comes back from the auditor, or something that we didn't turn in right or something before they're turned in here. So, and because the original agreement said by the 10th of the month, we have to have an amendment to it and change it.
Further discussion, questions? I have a motion and a second. No further discussion. Vote. 7-0 to approve. Through the, just got a timed event in 4 minutes here. Approve or disapprove recommendation on the special designation liquor license for Bev Acton Classic Catering, Inc. on May 3rd, 2013 at the Homestead National Monument Visitor Center. Get a motion to approve or disapprove?
So move to approve.
Moved by Byers to approve.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. Discussion, and I'm looking at Chief Deputy there. Could you speak? Can you typically we'll have Gus come and say any opposition, concerns, or...
I have his letter.
Oh, I have Gus's letter. I will read it in his absentia. Gage County Sheriff's Office is fully aware of the applicant's request and intentions to hold this function, and we do not oppose the issuance of the special designated license. That is from Gus, April 11th, 2013, and it is signed and sealed, if anyone would like to see it. Now, Bev, do you want to visit at all about... Name an address for the record. We want to hear you. Won't take much time. We got a timed event. See, we put you just in front of a timed event, so you can't
okay.
go on forever.
Okay. Beverly Acton, 31250 South 94th Road, Holmesville. The event is put on by the Homestead. It's for the Friends of the Homestead. It's a very small reception, I think about 60 to 70 people, and we're on a time frame there. I think we're about a three-hour time frame, so we'll come in, do the reception, and we'll be gone. And what is being served is, they're very specific, only white wines and light-colored domestic beers. So, I mean, they really take care of that place out there. So I personally will not be the person doing it. My daughter-in-law, Sarah, who bartends for us all the time, will be the person who will be taking care of the alcohol. So, just so you know that I'm not the one that's going to be doing the bartending, because that's what she does. So I'm going to let her do it.
And Sarah can be totally trusted.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm making a statement, but she can't.
Okay.
Everybody knows Friends of the Homestead. They do fundraising for the Homestead Independent, but they do work with Mark Engler out there, and they help to provide some funding for them, independent of the Homestead, but for them on their behalf. Any questions for me? Yes, Kathy.
It's not a question. I just know everybody knows my feelings on alcohol on public property, and so I will vote against it.
Any more discussion? Seeing none, we have a motion and a second to approve. No further discussion. Vote. 6-1. Kathy Setzer voting against. All others in favor. 6-1. Thank you. All right. We have less than a minute, so I'm... I'd like to bring forward the Veteran Service Officer, Phil Ditbrenner, and our first veteran to be honored here as part of our Gage County Veterans Honors Program, and I'll let him introduce the veteran.
First off, I'd like to just mention that we've received approximately 15 nominations and Don McPherson, who's going to receive the first one, received more than one, so he got the lucky draw of being the first one to come up. I'd like to introduce Don McPherson. Don was a fighter pilot in the United States Navy. He flew off a carrier in the Pacific, and he has a very neat history to tell. I'll let him do that, though. And not only that, after he returned after the World War II, he returned back to Adams, Nebraska, and was a pillar in the community there. He's worked with anybody who's grown up there and knows him through scouts, baseball, softball, and many other things. So at this time, I'd like to present this plaque on behalf of the Gage County Board of Supervisors to Don McPherson of Adams, Nebraska.
Well, thank you folks so much for this award. I know there's a lot of people over there that probably deserve this as much as I do. Do I have some time?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'll try to cover just real quickly and briefly my time in the service, which is about 3 years. Upon reaching the age of 18, of course, I had to register for the draft, and I decided that I really didn't want to get picked up in the draft. I had to want to have some choices. And so about that time, the Navy came out with the information to the public that they were waiving their requirements of 2 years of college in order to get into flight training. They had set up a V5 program, which was an 18-month training program, and I joined that in September of 1942. I began because of an injury to my father. I got a little deferment, so I did report then on February of 1943. I'm not going to touch much on training, but I just want you to know that the Navy really trained us well. It was an 18-month training, and we did a lot of physical condition studying and, of course, flying. I ended up at five different bases over that 18 months, and the first place that we started flying from was Grand Junction, Colorado. There we flew the small airplanes, you know, to like the Aronica, the Cub, Cadet, and those. The next month we were at St. Mary's, California, in Oklahoma, in each place where we'd fly just a little bit larger airplane. And my final squadron then was in Corpus Christi, Texas. And there we flew the SNJ trainer, and learned all of the fighter tactics, dive bombing, strafing, flying instruments, all of it took to be able to fly off an aircraft carrier in combat. The I ended up then graduating from Corpus Christi, Texas, and getting my commission there. And then I... when I graduated, I ended up already having orders cut to Daytona Beach, Florida. And there I would start flying the F-6F Hellcat fighter, which was a great fighter that ended up at the end of the war with a 19-to-1 kill ratio. So that gives you an indication how good a fighter they gave us to use and how durable it was. There, after graduating from that 3 months there, I was placed in something new that they had called a combat replacement team. And after we got through with our work there, even flying some submarine patrol over the Atlantic. We went to Great Lakes to the Naval Air Station there and checked out in carrier landings there. I had just, for the first time, got to go home for 10 days, and then I had orders cut to report to San Diego, California, for further assignment. After just like a week or so waiting for a ship to depart, we left San Diego then on a seaplane tender headed for Hawaii. And we got into Hawaii, into Pearl Harbor on Christmas Eve of 1924. But anyway, it was on December, and we ended up then. It was quite a surprise because when we pulled into the harbor, the banks of the harbor were just cluttered with metal, rusty metal where they dredged the ships that were rolling up, you know, from the harbor and up onto the banks, and there they lay, you know, turning rusty. We were transferred then to the southern part of Hawaii, and we ended up then taking training there. We more fighter combat tactics, some gunnery, and then again we got to do carrier landings off one of the large carriers, which was a lot larger than the one we flew off of out of the Great Lakes. It was very short time that I was with that combat team because Air Group 83 had lost a pilot in carrier landings. They were training off the island of Maui, so I was sent over there then to replace that particular person. When I got over there, I found out that the air group was all packed ready to go to combat. So the first time that I entered into combat, it was guys I'd never met before and had never flown before. So that was a little bit tight for me. The troop transport, the whole fleet actually was anchored there in Ulithi in the Carolinas. And we were put aboard the USS Essex, which was actually the first large carrier that was built after the war started. And there were something like 26 of them built after that, you know, before the war ended. Our carrier, the Essex, was flagship for Admiral Sherman. And so in the first combat cruise of 89 days, we were under his command, and we spent actually about 3 months under his command, and our first combat was like at the finish up of Iwo Jima, the finish up of the Philippines. We started doing bombing and strafing runs on Okinawa, you know, ahead of the invasion of Okinawa. And all this time of about 6 months of combat, we pilots pretty much all flew at least 100 missions during that time. There's kind of two different combat cruises, actually. And during that time, our air group and its fighters destroyed 220 enemy aircraft during that particular period. Of course, many on the ground, and we destroyed hangars, factories, trains, a little bit of everything, even some train ferries where they would ferry trains across from one island to another. During that period, I was a member of what our division was called, Wonder 5 Division, of four guys. I was flying wing on the division leader. And in my first encounter with the enemy, we were hitting an airfield on the island of Kyushu. And we'd gotten them out of bed, so we didn't have to worry about airborne aircraft. And so we, by using rockets and bombs, we tore up the airfield pretty badly. And when I went into my first dive, I picked out a big twin-engine bomber on the ground and shot my rockets at that, and ended up destroying it. The next month, then, we were, our particular division was vectored to the little island of Kikijima. The fleet had been under a tremendous amount of attacking of kamikazes, suicide planes, and they thought maybe this little island maybe was where those particular planes were departing from. So we were sent over there to destroy as much as we could, and we strafed and rocketed their hangars and what aircraft were on the ground and did a lot of damage that way. And on the way back, I guess I was kind of a lucky guy. We were flying at about 1,800 feet off the water going back to the carrier, and all of a sudden I spotted two Japanese dive bombers on a converging course, but they were below us and real low on the water. Well, the reason I would say I was lucky, I still had my guns off safe, so ready to fire, and all I had time to do was just push the nose down, put sight on the first airplane and squeezed the trigger, and I saw the pilot slip forward and flew into the ocean. Well, I made a big turnover to find out what happened to the second one, and it was heading for this island that we had just kind of helped destroy. So by using full power, I got close enough. I was just ready to pull the trigger, and I heard my division leader saying over the radio, he said, "Don, get out of there. You're getting shot at from the shore batteries." But I squeezed the trigger and saw it flame, so then I did evasive action to get out of there without being shot down. So that was my first time actually to get to airborne aircraft. Then division leader, then the division of our division kept going on various attacks. We would, maybe part of the time we'd be down on Okinawa trying to soften that up for an invasion. Then we'd be up on some of the big islands of Japan back and forth and back and forth for several months. And we ended up then helping with the invasion of Okinawa. Most of the fighters were carrying napalm bombs, which is a fire bomb. So we were scorching the beach, and there was hundreds of ships offshore, you know, bombarding the coast, and it really didn't take them very long to take the island as far as getting on shore. But the Japanese had pulled back into the hills, and so they had that first airfield, which I don't remember how many miles away, but anyway, they had it in 3 hours, and they thought it would take 3 days. So that really helped things get going. And then it was just, you know, a lot of supporting the troops there. We found a sub base where they were making and departing subs that just had one person. They were sort of a kamikaze type thing also, and it destroyed that. And the hardest, most tense duty that I had in the whole war was supporting our troops, because they would have maybe some Japanese bottled up in some tombs and caves and so forth in the mountains. And the only way they could get to them would be with flamethrowers. So they would call us, and we'd take rockets and try to get the rockets in there to help them out. And so that was so intense because you knew you had your friends all the way around your target. There's no room for missing. The one thing that I'll cover just briefly then, and I think my time probably is up, but later on after the invasion of Okinawa, we were sent over north of Okinawa. There were still a lot of ships there that had been there for the invasion. They had these destroyers north between Okinawa and the main islands as radar pickets. And so we were sent over there to protect them. That was, I think, on May the 4th. And when we got over there, the kamikazes had already started. They had done a little damage. And so my division leader, normally we fought in pairs or fours, you know. But he said, break up and get all you can get. And so in an hour's time, the fighters from our carrier and one other carrier shot down 100 planes in an hour's time. And I'm sorry to say we didn't quite get them all. But the one I really would like to talk about, I got three that day, within, which finished out my five to qualify me as an ace. But my my division of four, there were three of us that made ace that day. And the one it's kind of interesting to me, and I hope it will be to you, was I shot one of the kamikazes off of a destroyer that had already taken a hit, and was successful in downing that one. And I guess it's been about 10 years ago now, I got a call that there was a guy by the name of Art Jones wanted to talk to me, and he'd been a gunner on the destroyer called Ingraham. And so he called, and we talked for quite a while, and he had done some research through the archives, and he found out, and he firmly believed that I was the guy that saved them because they had already taken a hit. And he said, if we'd taken the second hit, he said, we'd have been sunk for sure. Well, I didn't argue with him, and he told me then, he said, you know, you fighter pilots were sure brave ones, because he said, you just came right on when you knew we were shooting at them too. After he said that the second time, I said, well, Art, you know, you guys must have been pretty good marksmen too, because we didn't come back with any holes in our planes. You know, to wind this up then, the atomic bomb, we were close enough to see the first one. We see the big mushroom cloud. Of course, we didn't see the second one, but when it came to the ceasefire, you know, combat isn't fun, but we got to do one fun thing. We were ordered to fly low level over all of the major cities in Japan and chart the prisoner of war camps. In the agreement, in the ceasefire, they were supposed to paint a big PW on the roof. And so we found a lot of them, and we found a few that weren't marked. And we'd taken, fly low level and roll the hatch back and toss out a packet which would open into a little parachute, and it would have, oh, like cigarettes, candy, maybe some reading material and so forth. And the second time we come back to second day to check on this one that we had charted before, why, they had our squadron number written on the roof and question mark, like news with question marks, and went back to the ship, said, they don't know what's happening. Said, we got to let them know. So they printed up leaflets, and we dropped those leaflets so that they knew that the war was over and they would be gotten out of there as quickly as possible. Well, our last duty then was flying cover for the signing of the armistice in Tokyo Bay. and covered the landing at Tsugi Air Base where MacArthur and the occupation troops went ashore. And then we loaded 1,000 passengers aboard the Essex and headed for Bremerton and Washington at the end of the war. Thank you. And thank you for this award.
Mr. McPherson, I'd like to say that I think on behalf of the board in Gates County, we appreciate your service.
Thank you.
God bless you for what you've done for this country and what you've done for your community up there, too.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you much.
Comments for Doug. I've got a timed event here we're a little late for, but that's absolutely fine. 9:32, I need a motion to close all bids for the 2004 Ford Explorer. We put out for, this is a previous sheriff's vehicle. Motion to close all bids.
Move to close the bids.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn to close all bids. Vote 7-0 to close all bids. We'll have a bid opening.
First bid is for $1,255.55. Melvin Thomas, Blue Springs, Nebraska.
Must not bid as much.
Bid number two is in the amount of $1,013.29. Ron Honesty, Wymore, Nebraska. And bid number three is for $925, David Lyons, Beatrice, Nebraska. And that is all the bids I see here, Mr. Chairman.
Get a motion to accept one of those bids, please.
Move that we accept the high bid.
Motion made to accept the bid in the amount of $1,255.55, and that's for, what was the gentleman's name?
Melvin Thomas.
Melvin Thomas. Motion.
Second.
Seconded by Setzer. Any further discussion? Seeing none, vote. 7-0 to approve awarding that bid. Lori? She wanted to visit briefly in conjunction with our Veterans Service, but I know we had that time bid, so
okay.
She wanted to speak briefly.
Thank you. As I sat here this morning and listened to your agenda, I am reminded about the quality of life that you have provided for all the citizens of Gage County, and maybe that is something that I have forgotten to say also thank you for the last 21 years that I have been a citizen of Gage County. Thank you for the quality of life that you have given myself and my family. When we first read in the newspaper and heard on the radio that you were going to recognize veterans, I went to Matt and asked if I could maybe come in front of you. And just I wanted to express our appreciation and to applaud you for your efforts in this endeavor. And as Phil says, you have now 15 applications, so I think you're on your way to having a successful program. SeraCare Hospice is also a national partner in what's called the We Honor Veterans. It's a pioneering campaign, and it was developed by the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization in collaboration with the Department of Veterans Affairs. The campaign is developed so that hospice staff and volunteers can receive ongoing veteran-centered education. to help improve that quality of life. It's provided to American veterans at end of life. And in cases where there might be some specific needs related to the veteran's military service, combat experience, or other traumatic events, AseraCare Hospice will find tools to help support those they are caring for. The Veteran Hospice Benefit provides quality end of life at no cost to individuals on their families. VA, Medicare, Medicaid, and most private insurance companies pay for those services and supplies related to the hospice diagnosis. This includes physician services, nursing care, medical supplies, prescription drugs, and counselings. Americans' veterans have done everything asked of them in their mission to serve our country, and we believe it is never too late to give them a hero's welcome home. Upon admission for AseraCare Hospice Services, we ask the patient if they have served in the military. If they have, they are presented with a framed certificate of appreciation from one of our hospice team members. The certificate is personalized with the veteran's name and the seal of the branch of the military to which the veteran served. What really seems like a simple thank you means so much to a veteran. I'm just going to stick this in here a little bit. Last week, I had the opportunity to have a gentleman come up to me and say, thank you for what you've done with just that simple certificate. It meant so much, and that gentleman has shared it with so many people. And he said it meant a lot to me, too, because I served in the military. And I took my hand out, and I shook it, and I said, thank you for your service, and his face lit up. So shake their hand, look them in the eye, and say thank you. And that's, you will watch their face light up. For many, it's those military experiences that they don't talk about that we do need to hear about, and especially before they pass on. For some, it's their hat and their dog tags that comfort them in their last hours. Last July, AseraCare sponsored a service in the Veterans Memorial Park here in Beatrice. The message was one of healing and praise for veterans and their families. It was successful and now will become an annual event. Hospice staff may provide the last opportunity for veterans to feel that their service was not in vain and that they are appreciated. Simple acts of gratitude at end of life can make up for a lack of appreciation or recognition during the veteran's lifetime, especially for those veterans who were never welcomed home or thanked for their service. More than 1,800 veterans die each day in the United States, which represents 25% of the deaths. Many of these veterans have had combat experiences that impact them socially, spiritually, psychologically throughout their life, and especially at end of life. Our AseraCare Hospice mission is to serve these men and women with the dignity they deserve. So, as a representative of AseraCare Hospice, I say thank you for honoring these veterans. As a mother of a son who serves in the Nebraska National Guard, I say thank you. Wow, I didn't think I was going to cry. For my son-in-law, who serves in the United States Army and has served right now in Korea, I say thank you. And for my fiancé, who has served 20 years in the United States Army, I say thank you. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you. Have a good day. Thank you. Wait, just less than a minute, we have another bid opening. Gentlemen from Emeritus are going to get to see the whole meeting today.
They didn't have anything else.
Well, they sat in the front row. That's good. $9.45, I need a motion to close all bids for the Sheriff's Cruisers, please. So moved. Moved by Doran.
Second.
Seconded by Hill to close all bids. Vote. 7-0 to approve. We have the bids down. Gary's going to open those up.
Do we want to go ahead and open these and then have discussion?
No.
Okay. Okay, the first bid appears to be from Carriage Motor Company. And there's only a statement on here that says Carriage Motors declined to submit a bid due to Dodge specific specifications. The second bid is from Beatrice Ford Lincoln. Looks like we have, I'm sure you see the confusion on my face, we have four attachments. I'm not seeing any pricing anywhere. Looks like the bid is for 2013 Ford F-150 Super Crew 4x4 for $30,761, and it has a star by it, and the starred comment is 6.2 liter V8 available. Add $2,792 to unit price. See attachment number 4 for additional standard equipment with 6.2 liter V8.
Is that for three? Then do they comment on the volume? I think we were letting for three. Is that correct? That's what we let for. Does it? Do they comment on the quantity?
I don't see any acknowledgement for quantity.
That was in the bid, though. That was a request, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, the third bid is from Gene Steffi, Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram. And there is a quantity acknowledgement of three. The unit price is $22,167. And that is a 2013 Ram Crew Cab 4x4 SSV. That's the three bids that we have here to open today.
Is the chief deputy still back there hiding behind Mr. Grill? Do you have the authority just to review these and make sure that they meet the specs? Could you just, you know, we can move on the agenda, and if you could look there and just to verify, please.
Are we comfortable with that, to have the chief deputy look at those in Justin's absence?
It's behind the specs. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask for a 5-minute recess for the law enforcement committee to review these bids along with the chief deputy and have a little bit of discussion.
Motion for a 5-minute recess for discussion. Need a second?
Second.
Seconded by Thorn. Vote. 7-0.
Yep. When will questions be allowed?
We'll talk about that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, regarding this?
Yes.
Yeah, when we talk about that, because I don't even have a motion yet to accept, so when we do, we'll have a discussion, and then is it? So 5 minutes just to look at them. We can. And as Mr. Juergens sit down, there you go. We'll reconvene the Board of Supervisors at 10:02, and I'll look at Supervisor Lytle for recommendation from the bids for the sheriff's trucks.
The law enforcement committee brings that we recommend the approval of the bid for the three Dodge pickups at the lowest bid price.
The recommendation, that's your motion from law enforcement?
That is the recommendation and the motion.
Mr. Lytle, need a second?
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion? Let's hear from the chief deputy first, please.
Yeah.
Just real briefly, I know I talked to the sheriff a little bit prior to today's meeting, and had like a little mini conference call here about the bids and the specifications. One thing that I'd like to point out in there is in the bid sheets, under the specifications, that it's clearly stated that they can deviate, you know, and if they do deviate from the specifications, just to give a brief explanation as to why, I guess for the motor size and type and different things, I know that 5.7 might be right now specific to Dodge, but if GM has a 5.3 or whatever, they can indicate that on there and then give an explanation as to why. I think for the price that it is, and it's quoted in Gene Steffi, I know that he had kind of given some type of explanation to the sheriff in effect, to the effect of that as a fleet dealer that they can get better pricing or something to that effect. And so even if there's a state bid price of a certain amount, that they, as a bigger dealer, that they can get a lower price, and they advertise these specials to agencies and different, end users, you know, throughout the state and different, I'm sure, other states. But so he had given notification earlier that they had this special pricing, and the sheriff had talked to some other, you know, dealerships that had inquiries, you know, and they just felt that they weren't able to meet that pricing, probably because of their inability to get that same pricing through the dealers.
Terry?
That was why our local dealer didn't bid on these, you're saying, or?
What the conversation that the sheriff had, he had indicated to me, and I think a couple of the board members have had some conversations with a couple of the dealerships when they had some questions as to the inquiries about the specifications on there. And so with the specifications was one concern, and the second was is that they just simply weren't able to get that good of pricing, that they were felt that they couldn't.
But they wouldn't have knew what this price was going into it. How would they know what that
I don't
price
know
is?
The answer.
You see what I'm saying?
Right. Right.
I mean, for all I knew, the price was $30,000.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr.
Barr. I just want to make sure that it's absolutely clear that we give all of our dealers an opportunity and a fair opportunity to bid on these vehicles and anything else that we're bidding on, that we don't draw specifications that eliminate or confuse or make it difficult for anyone else to be able to bid. I feel very bad about not having, not being able to award these contracts to local dealers.
I believe in the last, since I've been on the board, as we've bid, I would say, and I'd be somewhat flippant here, 80 to 90% of our purchases of vehicles do take place locally. Thinking of the highway department, when we purchase things, we bid those out. Specifically, Beatrice Ford has given us a wonderful price. And I think the vehicles that you all have across the street there, most of those are bought on the west side. Is that correct?
I know, like I think the two Nitros, they came through Twin Rivers, and then one of the Durangos we got, I think, from Beatrice Ford was a local trade, and one that we had bought a used one was out of state through a kind of a salvage dealer.
So I think there's a history of trying to do that locally, and I think that's the preference.
Go ahead. I mean, one other question I do have. These are going to be funded how then? Through
the in Gus's budget, there's about $5,600 left in there for vehicle purchase. The discussion at the committee the other day was that these will be out of inheritance fund, and the $5,600 for the vehicles that's left in that will be used to do the decal and the lights and so on. That should cover the three vehicles for that.
I guess my only comment, in the future, I'd like to see that in the budget. You know, I don't like robbing inheritance fund to pay for things like this. I think that goes into operations of the sheriff's department. That's where it should come out of. That's just my opinion. So in the future, I would just soon comes out of the sheriff's budget. If you got the money, fine. If not, we can do with what we got.
And to that, Terry, that was the discussion from the last meeting. The reason that we were doing three as opposed to two was to get the sheriff somewhat current on their vehicles so that, you know, it's the possibility that they can buy two a year and try and stay current without getting behind that mileage timeline, so to speak. So that's the idea behind this, is to get it to back to where that is in the sheriff's budget. I think that's something that we would all appreciate seeing.
But recall, if this goes into the budget, that comes out of the general fund, and so that will increase property tax valuation, or that will increase property taxes. And so when we use these sinking funds, and specifically inheritance fund, that is not calculated as part of local property tax. So if that's a decision that we want to do that moving forward, then property tax has the potential to go up, or we reduce the dollars that go into the sheriff's budget, and he has to live accordingly. And that's just the process.
Or restrict the mileage that's being put on these vehicles.
And that's a discussion
that's
with the sheriff's
department.
That's the other
thing that I would like to see done. I mean, where are all these mileage being piled up every year? What are we doing? That's my question.
And certainly it, you know, I think if they go in the sheriff's budget, those inheritance funds are going to be available for something else, you know, like maybe a more permanent road project or whatever. So it's kind of a wash that way, I'd think.
Yeah, I believe last time I had some figures from the 2011-12 fiscal budget that 294,000 miles, if you added up the lines in there as far as miles, transporting prisoners and other things, are roughly 300,000 miles a year. If you're going to put 150,000 miles on a vehicle, you're required, you will need two vehicles a year to replace that. 3 years ago, before we came on the board, they didn't buy any vehicles. 2 years ago, we bought three vehicles, and this year so far, we've bought one used vehicle with about 30,000 miles on it. Kathy last time made the comment, I believe, that they could share vehicles. Had a lot of time to think about that the last 2 weeks. That would be a good idea, but what it does is it puts you farther down the road. It doesn't decrease mileage. Gus drives 100 miles a day on a vehicle. Klaus drives 100 miles a day on a vehicle. You get rid of one vehicle and you share, they still each drive 100 miles a day on one vehicle. That's 200 miles instead of two vehicles, 100 miles each or whatever. That doesn't get you away from the – Denny always talks about we need a program for the sheriff department vehicles. If we're going to do 300,000 miles a year, 150,000 miles and two vehicles a year, period, that's what you need to do or you're going to keep falling behind. I agree with Terry that – the option you have is you need to decrease miles. Now, how do you do that? Number one is we don't buy vehicles. If you don't buy vehicles and they can't run them, they can't drive them. The other thing is we need to, as I guess, not us, but Gus, it's up to him, you put less people out on the roads. Gus keeps visiting with us and telling us about, you know, how few we have out there, and that the people of the county, how they would like to see more out there. When they find out what we do have out there, they go, you're covering that all with that amount of people. You know, I mean, you hear that. So that's a philosophy for another discussion, I guess, or whatever, but.
Discussion? No? Mr. Grell, you request to speak?
Alan Grell, 1907 Washington Street, Beatrice, Nebraska. As I said 2 weeks ago, we've been struggling with this problem for 16 years. I thought, gee, it's great that you're willing to buy 3 cars this year. And I don't know whether that'll be 2 or 3, but you need to sit down, you need to look at the mileage and that. Every day I get up and first paper I read is Beatrice Daily Sun. When at the courthouse is in there, when I'm done reading it, I go, oh my gosh, what's going on with the criminal element in Gage County? It's discouraging. When I grew up, you didn't see that much in there. Obviously, drugs have created quite a bit of that, but, you know, are you looking at that overall? I absolutely agree with Terry Juergens. I think taking the funds out of the inheritance fund is poor management. If you can't figure out how to run Gage County on the tax revenue that it generates to support that law enforcement office, then you ought to do what Myron's suggestion. Quit driving them so far, do away with the squad car, do away with the patrolman. But on the same days I think that, I read about rapes in Gage County. I read about child abuse. There's funny things going on out there. I choose to believe that, as Matt has said, the period of time I was up here, people, I was horrified when the sheriff would come over and say that he didn't feel we had enough patrols out there during evening hours, that he thinks that was mismanaged by the board because we were always too conservative. I don't know how many of you know. Do you know what the Nebraska State Patrol uses as a replacement mileage criteria?
We've heard 125,000.
I heard 130. So, and that's based on a lot of diagnostic analysis of what's going on with it. It was around 110, what I heard. I asked Lancaster County. They use like 125 or 130, and it varies. They had one other important factor, I thought. They had a economically non-repairable status. If a car broke down at 100,000 miles... and there were 30,000 remaining miles on basically the life expectancy of the budget flow of that PC equipment, they would allow $100 repair. So if it was 30,000 miles, it'd be roughly, $3,000 that they'd economically put back in that vehicle before they replace it. I was familiar with economic replacement of military vehicles. I think it's worth looking at sometime, but I think you make a very serious mistake in taking it out of the inheritance fund. Matt, I get real discouraged when you tell me my property taxes are going up when I look at the 7.5 cents that you allocate to townships. Townships are using about 4 cents of that. Townships average about $45,000 each. 4 cents raises about $800,000. You give them 3.5 cents that basically none of them are using. It sits there. It goes to waste. In my mind, you are significantly wasting dollars when you could bring some of that tax levy back into the county and you could put it in the sheriff's department, where in my opinion you need better financial management than what you got going on. But to allow that 3.5 cents out there, and yeah, that means each and every one of us in Gage County who benefit from law enforcement are going to share equally in that cost. $66,000 for three cars is about 30% of the valuation that 1 cent raises you. So I personally see it significantly mismanaged. I would hope you'd spend a little time. It doesn't appear to me that you ever really studied it in depth enough to know what's going on. But in my mind, we've been plagued with this problem for better than 16 years. I don't know. I'm kind of waiting to hear what FOP wants to tell you. But I'm sure that some of the issues with FOP are contributed to the fact that for many years they've seen us degrade that budget over there when basic items, patrol cars, adequate law enforcement personnel out there are not adequately addressed by the Gage County Board of Supervisors. And I'm like, Terry, that's what I choose to have be my opinion. I'm absolutely convinced that it can be managed better. I'm absolutely convinced, having worked with Gus and Doug when I served up here, that they know and understand how to do that. But they've always been frightened by the county board. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Grell, I'd like to address some of the things you said there. I think there's just a philosophy difference. I look at that tax revenue that's not being collected by either the township or the county as a tax savings. And I'll say, since I've been
That is true. It needs to be a savings. But if you want to continue to save and have crime rate go up in Gage County, which it is increasing, Matt.
I'd like to respond to some of the other things you said about mismanagement. I'll say that probably 3 or 4 years ago, the board took a very conservative approach at trying to put money away into sinking funds. We've worked with other elected offices to develop a wage plan to get away from the dramatic increases. They're slow, methodical increases that we can budget for. We are saving money into sinking funds, and when we do decide to leave those taxes on the table, that's a tax savings. Something we'll talk about later is the road bond issue right now. We have enough authority within the county to not ask the voters to vote on that, and we have philosophically believed that if we're going to hang that big of a carrot out there, we should allow the voters of Gage County to vote on whether they want to tax themselves. So I believe that our conservative approach, though different than yours, is that we should take only what we need and use the funds that we've saved for to keep property tax low. I believe we have enough dollars to do what we need to do. When there's extras, we go ask the taxpayer for that. It obviously is a philosophical difference between yourself and me. And that's okay. We'll just see things differently.
Yeah.
And that's okay. But I just think that any tax that you're not collecting and you're able to use sinking funds that you've already collected on is a tax savings to the taxpayer. And it's just a philosophical difference.
Well,
and I just wanted to respond to some of that.
In checking around with Cass County, Lancaster County, Adams, I'll tell you, more people share my philosophy about how it's done, because it's been very basic, and first of all, it's a critical functional responsibility of the county board to provide adequate funding to the sheriff's office. Now, either Gus is not telling us the truth, he wimps and comes in here, but let me tell you, I did it several times to the sheriff. Yeah, we don't want to spend that money, but cars are pretty darn basic. Matter of fact, most of you could probably afford a salary cut and help that. That'd be some tax savings, too. Matt, I'm not a significant spender of tax dollars. Never have been. I'll share a little story with you. I just shared it with CJ and Dave Merritt back there. But a long time ago, my father took me to see Terrible Terry Carpenter. You're probably not even old enough to know about that famous state senator from Scottsbluff, Terrytown. He came in here to the Steeple House. My dad wanted to go out and see him because he was really, I guess he was argumentative. He always had a strong opinion, and his opinion was well-sounded. And in fact, he started off that evening, and never forget it, he told this little story. He says, there's three things I love. First one is homemade ice cream. The second is sex. And the third is spending taxpayers' dollars when taxpayers aren't paying attention to how they're being spent. Matt, I think you'd find out the reason why so many people coming in sharing with these guys that they're concerned about law enforcement protection in the county is because it is critical to them. And the 60-some thousand dollars a year, are we saving it? Yeah, you're saving it, but are you wasting it because you need to replace these cars? You need to solve some problems. You're going to address another one here where if you even took more of it, you wouldn't have to waste any money on a bond issue. You can pay for the road repairment and keep control of it yourself with that 3.5 cents if you bring it in and use it effectively for county roads, which has been going on, and you can't get out of the problem you're in because it is so financially crippling. When I looked at your 1 and 6 year plan the other day, you guys talk about, I think, $100,000 in oil overlay. You need to look at that. That should be about $375 at $14,000 a mile for the 18 miles that basically you ought to sustain on an average basis. It isn't the 85643 that you show on your $1,000 cost. So I even question that philosophically. I see that to be somewhat mismanaged. It certainly could be stated accurately. Thank you for your time.
Any more questions for Mr. Grill? There's obviously a difference of opinion.
Yep.
Tax and spend versus spend what you've saved. And I think what we're recognizing here is that there is a need in a law enforcement entity. There has been, if you go back and look at the budget, there has been an increase in the budget every year. May not be as big as what the sheriff has requested, but I believe that he has provided appropriate law enforcement to Gage County when there have been additional needs. We visited with Gus. We've had full disclosure. If there's additional needs and a budget's your best guess based on his previous experience, and I believe that we've been responsive as a board. I would say for the last 3 to 4 years in our economic environment, we've been very conservative with how we've done our budget, but we also have been able to put money away into sinking funds, which are basically savings accounts that we've already taxed people for. And if we have an opportunity to dip into that, just disagree with tax and spend at the max. We've got a cushion there, and I believe that it's a good thing. What we're doing with the roads, I don't believe is a doom and gloom situation. It's part of maintenance. And it's big enough that I believe you go and ask the people if they want to tax themselves. And based on what we've done with the budget, I think that speaks with how we've operated here for the last couple of years, and I think we're going down the right road. There's issues that are going to come up. And this one particular one, which I admitted we've kind of moved away from, is we have a motion and a second, I believe, to accept the vehicles. I believe we've had good discussion and open discussion, which is good. Any further discussion? Vote. 7-0 to approve the purchase of the vehicles for the Sheriff Department. All right. That segues into the two gentlemen sitting up front. Well, you've been extremely patient with us, and I know this is the next thing. So let's, which ones do you want me to mean?
I'm going to hear from Dave and CJ first.
Going to hear from them first? Okay, we can move this around. Let's hear from Dave Merrill and CJ Johnson regarding Region 5 services and Region 5 systems, and then we'll get to you all.
Well, good morning. I don't know if I would rather be here and listen to the discussion or up at the Capitol listening to the Medicaid expansion debate, which I spent time with yesterday. I bring that up. My name is CJ Johnson. I'm the regional administrator for Region 5 Systems, which is responsible for the behavioral health services in southeast Nebraska, primarily to those individuals who have no other coverage or are underinsured. We utilize 13 different agencies to provide those behavioral health services. Primarily, Blue Valley Behavioral Health provides those in the rural areas. I brought up the Medicaid expansion because, as you can imagine, with the Affordable Care Act being enacted and the discussion that's going on at a statewide level of whether to expand Medicaid or not, we are really monitoring everything that's going on because, quite frankly, we don't know over the next 2 years what that's going to mean in relation to the purchase of services that we've been doing since 1974 in the state of Nebraska. We've had discussions anywhere from there might be a $1 million cost savings across the state in throughout the behavioral health regions, all the way to $42 million, which is over half the current allocation. We spent a lot of time with the Appropriations Committee prior to this legislative session to convince them not to go in and just guesstimate at $42 million and pull that out. Just the concern I would have alone of how that would affect our emergency system, the emergency protective custody system in the state, was quite scary. And so as of right now, the Appropriations Committee has not pulled any of that money out. Neither has the governor in his budget plan, which we're very happy to see at this point. If you go to page 9 in the report I gave you, we do talk about the emergency protective custody system. Again, this is a reminder that when your law enforcement has contact with an individual who is having an acute mental health crisis, they have to make a decision as to whether to place that person in a civil protective custody type situation or what we call an emergency protective custody situation. Years ago, prior to 2004, your law enforcement officers had little other choice than to go ahead and place that person in an emergency protective custody hold and transport them to Lincoln. In 2004, when behavioral health reform was passed, we went out and talked to your law enforcement officers, and one of the things that they were very clear about was two things. One is, if we could get some support on site to find other alternatives, we wouldn't have to place those people on EPCs. At least we believe we wouldn't have to, and therefore waste time leaving our county transporting. We did instill what we call our crisis response teams to your law enforcement officers. So when they do have that situation, they call an 800 number. We send out a therapist or we send out an emergency community support worker to look at those alternatives. Since that time, we've seen a 50% reduction in rural EPCs. In fact, it was almost immediate, within 6 months. That program has an 80% diversion rate, which means 80% of the time when they get called out, somebody doesn't end up going to a psychiatric placement or the crisis center in Lancaster County. The other thing we heard your law enforcement officers talk about was when they did have to place somebody on emergency protective custody, and I know some of you recall this, they would put the individual in the back of their squad car, and then they had to start calling around to find out where to take that person. They'd call Bryan Hospital. They'd call the crisis center. They might call Cornhusker Place in Lincoln. We also set up an 800 number for them where they call that 1-800 number, and the people at the end of that number know exactly what the bed capacities are, understand what the issue is, and then direct the officer to the appropriate place without them having to waste time calling around trying to find that space. As you can see in the upper left-hand corner, back in 2004, we had around 800, 850 EPCs annually. This last year, we were under 600. That's a good thing. It means our crisis center is able to provide most of the services, so we don't have the spillover into Bryan Hospital like we once had years ago. And I also think, and Don, you can probably attest to this, we now have set up a system where when, in fact, that may happen, you just send that info to us. We can reimburse for portions of that, and I think it works fairly well. Are you saying yes? Okay. I just want to make sure. Everybody else is saying yes.
Yeah.
So we have a good system. The one thing I do want to share with you that we're challenged with right now is the Lincoln Regional Center is the only place that we really have access to without going way out of our region to like Hastings or Kearney when somebody's placed on an inpatient commitment. The Lincoln Regional Center 2 years ago, 3 years ago, the average length of stay was 106 days. That meant we could have 125 admissions based on our available space. Last year it went up to 206, and the very last year went up to 277, which reduces our admission capacity to 45. Now, we've been working with the state to try and figure out what's going on because our recidivism rate isn't lower, it's not higher, so keeping people there an extra 160-some days is not improving their outcomes. So we're trying to figure out what's going on at the Lincoln Regional Center, and again, we've been working with the state to try and improve that. So any questions about the emergency system before I just jump to the next two items? Okay, if you'll turn to page 11, this is just real quick. We do have a rental assistance program. This is to provide a voucher program for individuals who have a serious mental illness and or substance abuse issue. We just got good news the other day, and it also shows maybe the economy's turning a little bit. We're going to get additional money into that program because it comes out of a portion of the stamp tax through the Department of Economic Development. What I always try and tell the rural counties is if you have somebody come to you for general assistance, I would really recommend they call John Turner at our shop. Even if it's not housing related, John is very knowledgeable of the system and many times has been able to direct people to other services before general assistance actually has to help. But if it is housing related and the individual qualifies, then obviously John would be able to maybe help them out with some of those. And that can include sometimes one-time funding, maybe utilities or something like that. So I'm just suggestion.
Because the reason I'm kind of hesitant on that is because we've done this in the past and we've been told no, that he does not do anything.
Well, and if he's not able to,
he doesn't provide anything.
What you can be assured of is if that person calls John and he hears what it is and he can't make any recommendations for that person to go anywhere else, what you can be assured of is you really are spending your general assistance on items that there aren't other supports for. That's how I feel about that, because he's been doing this for a long time and helping folks out. So, okay. And if you go to page 15, obviously all of you remember the safe haven issues a few years ago regarding children and the privatization issues that have been going on with child welfare over the last couple of years. Since 1995, we have been providing a program called Family and Youth Investment. It works with families who have a child with a serious emotional disturbance who are at risk of being removed from their community, their home, or their school. We have experienced a 95% success rate with this program, keeping youth in their homes who are at high risk of this. Because of this success, we received money after the safe haven issue came up to expand this program. What we did with that was, in talking to county attorneys, we found out that they had lots of parents coming to them trying to make their children stay wards in an effort to get them services or because they were told by somebody they should. So we developed the LINCS program as part of our program here, where the county attorney can refer that family then to that LINCS program. We have a therapist involved with the family then, do a complete assessment, look for resources in the community that they can access, and if they feel they need additional support, we can actually attach a professional partner, somebody who knows resources, knows how to develop those, to that family for a period of time. Again, this program, for every 100 families that have entered this program, 95 of those families have not had to go on and make their children stay wards, which is a huge cost savings to all of us sitting in this room. We also expanded this program to address youth between the ages of 18 and 26. A lot of youth, when they're transitioning out of child welfare or if they have serious mental illness, have a hard time transitioning from the services they received with the support of their parents into that adult service piece. We saw a significant number of repeat admissions to our crisis center with this age group. And since we started this program, have continued to see that decline and to provide support to these youth. And finally, in relation to children's services, and next year there's going to be a lot more because Senator Kathy Campbell is a huge child advocate, and she's introduced a number of bills that will be taken on next legislative session. We have started a contract actually with child welfare to address families, primarily at this point in southeast Nebraska, children or youth that are being referred to county attorneys because of truancy issues. We're trying to divert those youth from having to go on to be made state wards, having those county attorneys having to file. So we're able to take those referrals coming straight out of child welfare and start working with those families in an effort to try and keep those youth from having to become state wards. So we're really excited that we just started this contract a couple months ago. We're trying to build it up to capacity. So we're really excited about some of the future contracts we may have with child welfare for that same reason. Finally, if you go to the last page, as you know, and if you don't know, luckily we have Denny sitting here who was a senator, has been a senator and knows these things. It is in legislation that there is county contribution for the state general funds that are contributed to behavioral health. The governor, as well as the Appropriations Committee, has recommended that there be a 2.25% increase in those county or in state general funds. The regional governing board has approved the same increase for those contributions for that match. For Gage County, that would mean an increase of $741 to $33,654. And for substance abuse, an increase of $133 to $6,054. I would like to point out that Lancaster County, because of arrangements we've made to help support the crisis center and provide funding to support the emergency system as a whole, Lancaster County pays in a significantly higher portion of that contribution than they're required to. This is a significant savings to the rural counties, and it in turn benefits Lancaster County, but it also benefits the rural counties because, as you know, when somebody does go to the crisis center, there is a $120 a day charge for that. But if you've experienced any recent hospital kinds of activities, you'll know that if somebody was actually going into a hospital setting, that'd be costing you well over $1,000 a day to operate those EPCs. So with that, I can answer any questions. Dave comes up. Okay. I do want to thank Denny, though. It's really nice having an individual on the board who understands what we do. I mean, and not that other board members don't, but Denny intimately understands it. And over the years, had written a number of pieces of legislation and supported that really has helped support vulnerable individuals across the state. So
thank you, CJ. Yep.
So with you being on his board, do we get any potential in-kind contributions for his time? Can we credit that on in-kind contributions? No?
Sorry, I wasn't close enough to hear that.
I'm Dave Merrill with Region 5 Services, and CJ and I travel together, so you understand that they're an administrative agency that does behavioral health and alcoholism and substance abuse. We provide direct supports to people with intellectual disabilities and other developmental disabilities. This is actually my 26th presentation as the director of Region 5 to the Gage County Board, 26. But the reason I mention that is when I was hired by Region 5 Mental Retardation Services. And over the course of time, that language moved to developmental disabilities, and now it's moved to intellectual and other developmental disabilities. The idea is trying to take the R word out of all of our language, because I don't know if you've ever heard kids, but they still call each other by that, and sometimes you hear adults use that term. There's a bill in the legislature this year that will remove retardation from all the statutes and regulations that exist and replace them with this new language, and the people who have been on the receiving end of that R word were some of the strongest testifiers. So that's why I wanted to make the point about the time frame of what we've seen over the years. I'll turn you to page 4 in the glossy report. which is the charts and graphs in Region 5 services continues to grow. Joanne will do the local report and talk about our growth in Beatrice specifically. But basically, you'll see a kind of our positive indicators of success and the efforts that we're making there. We support somewhere around 900 people. There's about 5,000, just under 5,000 people supported in the state of Nebraska, and the other 39 certified providers provide the rest of the supports. The number of staff has gone up, and is getting pretty close to 1,000 staff. 400 and some of those are part-time. We believe the Affordable Care Act will be making it so the number of employees that we have will go down, because we will have more full-time employees if they've been working an average of 30 hours a week for whatever designated time period we choose. Funding has gone up. Basically, we get paid by the state for the number of supports that we provide. So we sell our staff time to the state. If we serve more people, we get paid more money. And everybody gets paid the same of the 40 certified providers. I'm going to leave these reports with you, and you're sure would hope you'd take them home. We have trouble still. There's people that don't know about Region 5 services and what we do, even though we've been around for 40 years, and there's still an awful lot of people that don't know about that. Cutting to the chase for funding, our request for next year will be $39,713, which would probably not pay for one employee, and we have a significantly growing program here in Gage County, and you run it through the governing board for less than 1% of the total budget. That amount, by the way, is lower than it was 18 years ago, just for the record. And you don't have many things in your budget that are actually less over that period of time. The other big change that is happening in our field is we'll have a new funding methodology. This will be the fourth change that I've seen over the 25 years of different ways of paying us by the state. I know that their motives are to improve the system. So we hope that we'll get through the transition and everything will go well, and we'll make things work for Region 5 services. Any questions for me before I turn it over to Joanne? She's the fastest talking area director in Region 5.
Go get her.
She's been sitting on the edge of her chair for a couple of hours.
Good morning. I'd like to give you a handout here in Gage County. We've been providing supports here in Gage County for 37 years. We have four basic types of services: job placement, vocational, residential, medical, and transportation. We have a business site located at 2315 Centennial Drive, and this day service site supports 22 people with disabilities at this time. Some of the different skills that we teach at this site are listed for you here, so you can kind of see what the different activities are that we do. Residentially, we are providing supports to 23 people in our Gage County area. We have five residential settings that are 24 hours supervised. The average number of persons in a home is three individuals, and I've listed out the addresses so you can kind of, if you have time, stop by and say hello to us. There are five extended family home settings in Gage County where seven people are being served, including one child. An extended family home is a private family who has an individual we support live with them, and we provide training and things to enhance their skills. And so in addition to that, I have listed out the different things that residential services do, the skills that we work with and teach: balancing their checkbook, paying bills, ensuring medications are administered properly, cooking, cleaning, normal things that you and I do in our home. We provide medical supports. Each individual we support has annual physicals, routine dental and vision exams. We ensure prescriptions are obtained should anyone have a cold and need to have an antibiotic or any medical support that they may need. Transportation services are provided throughout both our vocational and our residential setting. And we have affiliations with a lot of businesses here in Beatrice, and I just listed them out so you could see a few. As you know, Alcoa is no longer a discount store here, and we're sorry for that because we had an account with them for several years. But I wanted to see all the different, wanted you to be able to see all the different business affiliations we have. The last page that I have is kind of an update for you from last year. Currently, we have 53 employees that work for us full-time, part-time, and relief status within Gage County area. We have transitioned 6 people from BSDC into our supports. That allows us the pleasure of working with the Department of Justice when they come through to ensure that the individuals are having good services provided leading the institutional setting. There are 6 adults and 1 child being served in extended family home settings in Gage County. We employ an LPN in Beatrice, and she works under the direction of a registered nurse out of Lincoln. Last fall, 9 people worked for the Salvation Army on a seasonal basis, ringing bells during the holiday season. We have a number of people who work at volunteer sites, including Head Start, the Humane Society, AseraCare, the Salvation Army, and they help out during homestead days as well. 5 people are working on a rotating schedule at World Lawn. 1 individual recently was hired by Valentino, for which she's very proud of. I asked her to come to the meeting with me today, but she said, sorry, I got to go to work. So 1 individual has a job at Beatrice Ford dealership, and he has worked there part-time for 3 years now. And several people participated in the Relay for Life Cancer Walk at Gage County Fair. Fairgrounds. As Dave said, I pretty much go through my report quickly. Is there any questions that I can answer for you?
I've got a question. I guess explain the transition of 6 people from BSDC. What brought that about?
I guess that deals with the Department of Justice a little bit, and maybe Dave could answer that better than I.
Over the course of time, we've had a number of people that have moved from Beatrice to the community. When the institution was in some trouble with CMS and the Department of Justice, there was an emphasis of making sure that people that could receive supports in the community do. And so we've tried to help the department with that situation. We think it's really good for the people that we support as well. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And we do serve 1 gentleman who is medically fragile, and he seems to be doing pretty well, and his family are pleased with our services. And I think that was used at 1 time as well.
Yes. It's been amazing. Gage County is actually one of our fastest growing programs, percentage wise. And I just thought you'd be interested in that. We are employers in Gage County. And I have to say, I've known Dennis Byers for 33 years, and we are so fortunate to have him on our governing board. And in a group of 16 committed, talented people, there was no question they wanted him to lead us again this year. So we're very appreciative. So
thank you, Dave.
33 years. Did you meet in preschool?
Yeah, it was.
We met right here, actually.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
Gotcha. Any questions? All right. Let's see here. Approve or disapprove resolution calling for a special election on the Gage County Road Project, which we discussed last meeting. A motion to approve or disapprove?
Make a motion to approve.
Moved by Mr. Juergens.
Second.
Second by Mr. Dorn. Discussion? Anybody want to... We're looking at mail-in.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Talk to the election commissioner.
Yes.
Mail-in ballot due by, can you speak to that process a little bit?
The deadlines are a little different on a mail-in election. The ballots would need to be returned by 5 o'clock on the election day, and if so, moving forward, it'll probably be the stated here, June 11th. And that's basic difference. Otherwise, the mail will be your format. All the ballots will go out on one particular day to every registered voter that I have in my system. They can be returned via the drop box, U.S. postage, or in person. My office by 5 o'clock.
And in visiting with the bonding companies, which we'll talk to a little bit here, it seems like the mail-in reaches the most people, gets the best turnout, and I think that's our goal, is to get the touch as many people as we can and get the greatest cross section of a return on the voting. So, Kathy,
I never let it be said that I always have to come out on the winning side, because I don't think this is going to be the case today. I have talked to a number of people, and whether they were for or against the roads, the bond issue for the roads, the majority of them were against a special election, and so I'm going to cast my vote against it just to represent the people that I've spoken to. So,
more discussion?
Resolution
13-13 to proceed with a special election mail-in ballot. I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, vote. 6-1 with Kathy voting against. Next, approve or disapprove retaining a financial company to handle the bonding process on the county road issue. I need a motion to approve or disapprove.
Motion to approve.
Moved by Byers to accept.
Meritus.
Meritus as our bonding company. Motion by Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Kathy.
I'd just like to say, I know it seems contradictory for me to vote for a bonding company when I voted against the special election, but obviously that did not carry, so we still need to have a bonding company.
You want to speak to the process we use?
Yeah,
it's different than before.
In the past, the county has had a good relationship with Emeritus, and we had some interest from some other companies, Smith Hayes and D.A. Davidson, and we had all three of those down last Thursday. We had the Finance Committee have a meeting here at 2 o'clock last Thursday, and they all got to give a proposal of about 20 to 30 minutes. And then after that, it took us a good hour plus to decide yet on which company to go with. There were some very good proposals, and we greatly appreciate that from those companies. It was also interesting to see how they projected this and everything. And based on that decision, though, the Finance Committee decided to choose and recommend to the Board Emeritus.
I'll say there was a close second and then a distant third, just as a point. So,
and do you need them to talk about this or the interest rate or otherwise? I'd just soon have them. I mean, I don't care. How do you handle it?
The gentleman from Emeritus, come on, just identify yourself for the record, then visit with us a little bit about the process for the record, please.
My name's Mark Munford with Emeritus. This is Jay Spearman as well with Emeritus. And first of all, I want to thank you for the opportunity to work with you through this process. Having passed the resolution to call the election, we do have some paperwork for Don, and I apologize. It's kind of, we have three copies of everything, so it's all marked for you. It'll be somewhat painless. So the process moving forward. The timeline we're on is going to be pretty pressing, just because we're looking at a June 11 election and a mail-in ballot. The ballot goes out about almost 3 weeks prior to the election day. So in order to try to get our message out on the process and on the need that is perceived here to get the project done, we need to really get humping. And so I think it'll be important to, on a timeline, we had a timeline in our proposal that I think, Myron, you have seen. we probably want to push that up a little bit, and hopefully we'll have the ability to meet with some of you folks next week, as early as next week, if that's possible, to kind of go through some of the process that we'd like to, I mean, as far as we've got to get an informational piece put out there, whatever medium that may be, whether you want to go, you know, do we want to go do a flyer, handout type deal, you want to do mailings, do we want to use the media, you know, we've got to get the word out about this project so that to educate the voters. I mean, that's the bottom line. We're not out to twist anybody's arms. We're out to say, hey, here's the project, here's the way you've chosen to try to fund the project. Now we're looking for your support. You're either going to vote for it or you're going to vote against it. But they need to know exactly what they're voting on. And so that's really the essence of what we will try to help you through that process. And we're willing to commit our time, resources to come down. Typically what we do is we'll spend an hour or so a week with folks from the entity that we're working with, and try to get some of the folks that are down here to get on board. And we kind of need the community to get behind it a little bit, because it's typically these things don't work well if we're the ones trying to drive the bus. I mean, I don't live here in the county, and I'm not the one that's going to be paying the taxes. So, but you folks are, and so we certainly would like to have a group of individuals, if you could identify, come to a meeting next week and kind of get this ball rolling. Because, again, like I say, we're 8 weeks to the election day, and those ballots will go out in 5 weeks, or close to 5 weeks. So we're in a pretty pressed time frame.
You need to meet with a group of this from here, or are you talking already community leaders?
Well, I think it would be helpful to have maybe a few of the commissioners, because you've been through the process of how you got here. So that'll help educate some other community leaders that might be supportive of this project. And it could start out with just a few folks, but we ultimately want to see that group grow as much as possible. And then kind of from there, we'll find out from those people what are the mediums that we're going to take, how we're going to approach this, you know, how do you want to get the word out? And again, that's going to be something that's unique to Gage County. Some people are happy with, hey, we've got a brochure put together, we're going to do a mass mailing of it, or we're going to do handouts of it, or we should probably have some community meetings. We should probably schedule a couple community meetings. Probably like to have community meeting in each township, if possible. But again, that time frame. So we've got to really, like I say, we really need to get that organized and in a short period of time.
You spoke of advertising or education of the public. Who that costs money for a flyer to be mailed out for advertising? Where does that money come from?
Well, typically we'll do a little fundraising deal. I mean, we'll start up, set up a whether it's Gage County Citizens for Better Roads or whatever, we'll form a committee. That group will try to raise some money. I don't anticipate this being a $15,000 campaign. I anticipate this, but again, that's up to you folks. I anticipate it being a, you know, $1,500 to $3,000 deal. But I don't, again, that's not my decision or our decision on how we.
Typically, it's about $1,500 to $2,000, but like Mark said, it really depends on what that committee decides to do, as well as how much fundraising.
But tax dollars would not go into?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
I guess the other thing is the county stuff is, I mean, we can't use any resources of the county once the election is called. So, you know, and that's just a no-no, so as far as printing materials or what have you, that's all paid through the committee, outside of official county business.
So we would welcome you moving into Gage County if you would like, Mark. We can help you find a house.
Well, my youngest daughter's just moving out, so we're almost free.
Mark, do you want to talk about ballot language and the number taxpayers as well as the levy and how it
yeah, we should. We should touch on that. Thank you. In the ballot language, there is a paragraph in there that states, and this is a little different because it's a road project, and in the county statutes for the county roads, they basically state, if you look on page 2 above, the paragraph right above where it says for or against, you see that? Is everybody with me there? It says, shall the county cause to be levy and collected annually a special levy of taxes of not to exceed 3 cents per hundred? Is everybody with me there? Okay, that has to be in there statutorily for the county road project. I was a little concerned about that yesterday and had conversations with Don about it, just because we've got interest rates on these bonds here that are, we won't issue bonds, assuming a successful election, we won't issue bonds until July or August. If you have a June election. So what's going to happen in the interest rate market, in the municipal bond market between now and then is anybody's guess. So I'd like to have some wiggle room in there. But hearing earlier the comments from the assessor, from Patty, about valuations possibly going up 12%, conservatively, if you take half of that, if they go up 6%, that's going to give us quite a bit of wiggle room in these figures. So I just wanted to point that out, because 3 cents on your current valuation raises about $625,000, okay, roughly. And in our debt service schedule that we provided you at the interview, we're at about 610 a year. So we only had about $15,000 of wiggle room. So you can see if valuations were to dip a little bit, or if interest rates were to go up, 30 or 40 basis points in the next three months, then we're kind of hitting that lid, and I didn't want to put you in a position where that 3 cents doesn't cover your debt service. So, but hearing Patty's comment, I think we're very comfortable that if you hit that $2.35 billion, that's going to raise $705,000. 3 cents will raise $705,000, I think is the number we did real quick back there. So it does give you a substantial amount of wiggle room in there. Rates could go up 200 basis points, and you still have plenty of room. And so that at this point in time, I don't see that being a concern.
Because what we originally estimated on last year's valuation was 2.92 cents, and with potentially the new valuation that we'll have for 2013, we're probably looking at a 2.65 cent levy. So even though in the ballot language it says 3 cents, it doesn't mean you have to levy the 3 cents. It just means we can't levy more.
Right.
We can sure levy less, and of course that's what we want to have happen for the taxpayers of the county.
But we certainly do need to have enough to cover, though. I mean, otherwise we've got to go into another fund to pay, and we certainly don't want to get into that nightmare.
Myron, speak to the proposed interest rates is through the, we've talked about it before, but we got some closer numbers.
Oh, sorry, I was visiting with John. Go ahead.
And speak to the interest rates we discussed through the process.
Emeritus's proposal here, but basically all the companies pretty much came in, the all-inclusive interest rate, which includes some fees and everything else,
right,
on this proposal and the bonds that you know for today was 1.599%,
yeah,
or just right at 1.6.
Correct.
But just as you commented, that could or will vary based on
market conditions.
The market conditions when you sell the bonds. But for this proposal that today, I think that's pretty, very, very cheap interest rate, I guess.
Oh, no question about it. Rates have been extremely low for a number of years now, but we have seen 2 weeks prior to this proposal, we would have been probably 15 or 20 basis higher. And it's all supply and demand. It varies on a daily basis. But we did these numbers Tuesday. We finalized these Tuesday before your Thursday meeting. Is the rates that we took, and so again, those are something that if we were going to be in the market tomorrow or today, we'd be fine probably still. But we're going to be looking at July, August time frame probably, assuming a successful election.
We don't see anything on the horizon that says rates are going to go up 200 basis points, but at the same token, we don't know. So it's, you know, we just kind of go with what we know now and try to project it forward and hope, hopefully we're in the ballpark.
Mr. One interesting on that proposal was during the life of this 10-year bond, the interest rate that we would be subject to paying is less than $500,000. I mean, that's a lot of money, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But is am I correct on that? It was 400.
460, just under 466,000 is what we're showing.
And the interest rate started out in year one at 0.3%, and in, wasn't it?
0.45.
Okay, 0.45, and it went up to two.
Went up to two.
Year 10, so
it was
that's
2%.
The interest rate that we're looking at over that 10-year period. So, you know, interest as far as interest rates goes, very reasonable.
No question about it. And these are all points that I think would be brought up in our supportive literature to get out to the voter. You know, is to talk about obviously the perceived need, the need that's there. So we've got the problem or the need, and then we've got a fix, and then we've got what's going to cost you. I mean, it's pretty simple. We don't want to inundate people with 15 reasons why to vote yes, but let's put it in plain simple English that, hey, here's the problem, here's the cure or the fix, and here's what it's going to cost us. And I think that way people can get their arms around it and say, all right, well, I'm either for it or I'm against it. And hopefully we can spell out too, maybe specifically some of the roads, and I'm sure you folks know them already, but to give paint a picture of the for the people too of, hey, this road, you know, from here to here is going to be taken care of, and so on and so forth.
Those roads have been singled out already. Yeah.
I mean, it'd be nice to have have a list of those, or maybe we have in the literature it says, in order to see what roads have been identified and what's going to be the fix, instead of having that all on a 4-page printout, go to this website and you've got a detailed, breakdown of those so people can see. So, I mean, that's all stuff that we'll need to talk about next week, but I think that's, if that works for you guys, or for a few of you anyway. And gals, I'm sorry. Guys and gals.
Gender neutral.
Yeah, right.
One quick comment. In this resolution, right there above where you vote for or against, it says 20 years.
That's just because that's the max you can go on a paving on a county paving project is 20 years. The financing you ultimately put into place is, I know we've talked about 10 years.
Right.
And that'll be what's put in the literature too.
Okay.
Is we'll say that even though the ballot states we can't exceed 20, that's the statutory limit you can finance a road project for. You're looking at financing for 10 years. The other reason that is in there is because it's tied to that 3 cents. That gives the bonding company, if we were to say that you didn't get your valuation increase, say that interest rates went up 2% before we issued them, now 3 cents didn't give us enough money to cover that debt service, you could move it to a 12-year financing or follow me to keep it in that 3 cents a year. So you almost have to put it in there just because of the timing, and you don't know what the rates are until you actually go to issue them. Does that make sense? I mean, the 20 years, and it might be, I mean, that's something we should address, too, because some people may read that and go, wait a minute, we're paying roads for 20 years?
Well, we did.
We can change that to 10 years. Just statutorily, we're limited to 20, but we can put 10 in there, but that limits us. But we cannot do 11-year financing. We have to stick with the 10-year.
That would be
and
my
I think
preference,
we would
is
be
to
fine
change it to 10.
Change the language to 10.
Yeah, and leave the 3 alone.
Is that what you'd like to do?
But I do have a question on the interest rate. If it's not fixed at this time, I mean, the proposal at this time was at slightly less than 1.6. How's that going to be determined, I mean, based on how the market moves? Is it going to be based off of some market index, or
the interest rates aren't set until the day the county adopts a resolution authorizing the issuance of bonds. If you would like us to index it compared to the date we put our proposal in, we'd be more than happy to do that.
Well, but don't we need some type of index if we select you? I mean, if you're the only one there, I mean, you can maybe add a couple tenths of a percent or something.
Well, I mean, we certainly could. If we did, we'd have a tough time staying in business.
Well, yeah, that's true.
I mean, and honestly, and that's true because, and you make a good point, and oftentimes that's the trouble with RFPs in our business, is we're giving you an interest rate based off of what we think we could do it today, mm-hmm. but we're not issuing bonds until 3 months from now.
Right.
So how do you do that? Well, you do index it, but nobody asks for that. And so to come in and say, hey, we're going to index these bonds, we're going to say we're spreading, you know, 50 basis points or 30 basis points to the AA scale, you all are going to look at us like, what are you talking about? Or most people will. And I shouldn't say you all, but most people look at us and say, well, why are we doing that? Or what does that mean? And so I understand what you're saying completely. And we can go back and try and put an index, or, you know, spread to the.
But your fee. I mean, what Emeritus ends up with the fee out of here, that's spelled out in here already.
Yeah, the 80
basis
points.
So the bonds aren't tied to your fee.
No. Okay.
I mean, yeah, I think that's where you're coming from. Yeah. Yeah.
We're not paid. We're paid on our fees here. Our underwriter's discount is 0.8%.
Right.
So on a bond issue of $5,640,000, we're going to make your fee our fee to you would be $45,120.
Yeah, right here.
We're also keep in mind we're going to have the time and effort during this campaign process for lack of a better term. We'll be there on a weekly basis. I don't charge anything other than a hamburger and an occasional beverage. No, I'm just kidding. We don't charge a fee for any of that. That's part of the service that we provide to help you guys through this process because you don't do it very often. And when you do it, that's what we do, and we're there to assist you through that.
Right. And also keep in mind, Mark and I don't actually sell the bonds to the investors. Our job is to get you the lowest interest rate possible.
We're working on behalf of the issuer, you guys. I mean, that's ultimately what we're doing. Our sales guys and the trading desk, they price it and they sell it. And I know there's some local folks here that probably would like to sell some of these bonds, and they'll certainly get a crack at them. So, and that's, we've always had that standing.
And if we are off the market, our competitors will let you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, key, the job, no, job one is to get that election passed. I mean, because if we don't pass election, you're back to square one, and we're not issuing bonds, obviously, under this statute. So that's really job one.
I got one more quick comment about it, and I a little bit when I read the article from Chris yesterday in the paper and it brought it up, and Kathy even brought it up last time. You had the 5.582 million or whatever, and we'd originally come out with a 5.6 something or whatever, and where that changed was the original proposal that came out of committee included by the Philly Bridge project, the half mile coming out of Philly to overlay that. Well, we're not going to overlay that half mile because that's going to be new curves and new pavement there anyway. So that's why it came back at the last meeting. We couldn't answer Kathy's question why, but Mark had given those to Don ahead of time, and through all the conversation, we missed up on that. But that's why the one segment in there does not include the half mile or the mile or the area coming out of Philly, what's going to be in the Philly Bridge project anyway. That's why it was a little less, because I think I can't remember the dollar amount, but it was a little bit over 5.6 million what you had in there, and that was originally what came out of committee, but it got changed or whatever, and I apologize for that, but that didn't get caught
because
you just confused me then. Well, so this should be the 5.2 on here.
No, this the bond issue is, I mean, the bond is 5.582 million. That's the road bond. But then you have to include their underwriting fee, the cost of insurance, and the rounding amount, and then it comes up to 5.640 million. So those other fees are included in what bond is voted on, includes their fees, insurance,
correct,
and that, okay?
But the other number was less, and you said that was because it did include it, the Philly?
It did not. No.
So does this include the Philly?
This does not include the half mile coming out of Philly. That's going to be part of the Philly Bridge project. Okay. When we first came out of committee, and what some of us had at our last meeting was $5.621 million bond issue. That included from the town of Philly to the town of Adams. In our committee discussion, it was brought up that we don't really need to include the first half mile coming out of Philly because that's part of the Philly Bridge project, which will, if everything goes right, be done next year anyway. So Mark Minnelli, at the meeting, you had a paper that had the figure, that figure not in there, that first half mile, and it was $5.582 million. Okay. But now the proposal and what will be voted on is back up again to a little bit over the 5.6 because it includes their fee, an insurance fee, which...
What's cost of issuance fee?
That's for the lawyers to write out, all of that. And then what they explain, a rounding fee, because they're sold in
$5,000 increments,
and not all of them are there, so it's a rounding a little bit.
So that $4,300 also goes back to the county. We'll go into the project. And we describe it as, and just to clarify, Myron, when you say the bond, the $5,582,000 is what we're funding with a bond issue of $5,640,000. So that, $5,582,000 is the project cost.
Okay.
The bond's issue size is larger than that because you pay all your fees to issue the bonds out of that total bond issue. Does that make sense?
Okay. So I worded it wrong. The project cost now doesn't include the first half mile. Thank you.
I think he found the right word.
The project cost doesn't include approximately the first half mile coming out of Philly.
More questions? Ellen was waving at me to get your question answered.
If knowing what's going on with municipal bonds and that, if there's still a rush into equities, I mean, this is a real small offering. You're going to have no problem selling it ultimately.
No, they'll sell it in 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
We would suspect that it would all be sold in Gage County.
Yeah.
Probably the vast majority of it. I mean, it certainly won't leave the state. I know that.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it might trickle some of it out of Gage County, but it might not. I mean, it's the size of a bond issue that's kind of in the sweet spot, so to speak.
I guess $3 to $6 million
range.
The half mile you're talking about, the Philly Road, is that ultimately then in the monies allocated by feds?
By the feds for the Philly Bridge project, yes, to straighten the two curves.
Okay.
That is part of that project, yes.
We're not going to have to find new money for that.
So we don't have to find, this money does not have to do that because that, and originally when it was and pulled that back out, yeah. We don't need to do that half mile twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Approve emeritus. Any more further discussion?
Well, I still have the discussion on whether it's going to be 20 years or 10 years. I mean, this is just for these projects that we've outlined. It's not going to anything else.
Correct.
And I would move that we amend that to 10 years.
But this is the bonding company. We already passed a resolution that has the
yeah, it's just the bonding company, yeah.
You're just approving that? Yeah.
And reconsider.
You'll have to change, but you can amend that if
so we want to go back then to the let's do this first. To approve or disapprove using the Meritus as our bonding company. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, vote. 7-0 to approve using Emeritus. So John, we're going to go back and looking at, was it Terry and Myron?
Mm-hmm.
To reconsider. To John, you should have brought that up beforehand.
I didn't see that
good point. So reconsider 1313 to amend the language. Go ahead and speak to that. I guess I did the second.
Second that.
Terry, and you made the initial motion. So I need you to amend and speak to John.
Oh. On my original motion, and I would like to amend. I mean, is that okay? I would like to amend that original motion and take out the 20 years on the bond issuance and make that 10 years.
Second.
Yeah. So that's what will show up on the ballot then?
Correct.
Yep. Under section one.
Yes.
Mark, I just want to, so everybody understands that if through something unforeseen, which it is at this time, the rates jump up a little bit, if we don't have enough to cover that on that 10-year period, it make it basically fiscally solid.
We either don't issue the full amount, or if statutorily you're limited to that 3 cents then. So if the 3 cents won't cover the entire debt service, then we've got to go from somewhere else to find that money. Now keep in mind, 2013 in December, you have a current highway allocation bond that is coming off. This would be your last courthouse bond that's coming off. Well, that's right. The highway allocations run a few years longer. That's correct.
16.
That's right. That's correct. Well, then that's a mistake. Correct.
But the courthouse bonds were voted, weren't they? If I remember correctly.
Yes.
And that's roughly the same debt service or principal and interest as the new project that you will be voting.
Right.
How much of that 3 cents would we be using at the current 1.6? Would be using most of it? Do we have any leeway?
At the current what now?
Well, at the current
interest
rate of 1.6%.
The conversation. Just for the record, just come closer so we can get you on.
Yeah. We're going to continue.
At the current valuations?
At the current expected interest rate of 1.6% or slightly less than that, how much of that 3% would we be using? Or
3 cents.
Yeah, 3 cents.
If, according to the valuations and the interest rates we've used here, you're at about 2.92 cents.
Okay.
So we don't have a lot of wiggle room in there. But again, those valuations we used were 2012's valuations. You'll have new ones in August moving forward. So if those are up 10%, why that 3 cents raises you another 70 or what would we figure? $75,000, $80,000 a year additional funds. So you wouldn't have to even levy the 3 cents. You'd get it down to about 260, 265. Does that make sense?
One thing I'd like to comment to, the quotes that we have on this road project are quotes taken off the state's bids that they have gotten. You know, hopefully, I've seen fuel dropping a little bit, everything else. We could come in lower than what they're coming to, than what this is shown to. I mean, it's a big enough project. I think it's going to attract enough people that I think that could get that bid price down cheaper than what we're showing it in here.
The other thing, if that's the case, you're not obligated to issue the entire amount either. The voter approval gives you the right to issue up to that amount, not exceed it. But if your bids came in at 5.3, then we issue enough money to get you the 5.3. So that can be adjusted as well.
I think Mr. Hill's point's well taken, is that we would be giving information contrary to what they're actually going to see on the ballot.
I agree.
That's the major concern. Well, they said 10 years. Well, this says 20 years.
No, so it's a good
point. It becomes – there's merit in that. I understand that.
No, it's a good point, though.
Okay. More discussion? Okay, so we have a motion, a second, to go – we amended the motion, reconsidered. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, vote. Kathy, do you still want – you abstained the first time. Would you like to – okay.
I didn't know. I voted for it. I voted against the special election. Yes. That's the resolution.
That's what we're changing that.
Oh, for the special election.
So let's reconsider and light them up again. Okay. Kathy continues to vote no. Okay. All right. Lisa Cervini? Discussion on the march against child abuse.
Next one.
Lisa Cervini, 117 Franklin Avenue, Beatrice.
And Jenny Party, 922 North 9th, Beatrice.
Good morning, and we want to thank you for allowing us to speak today. We have a few words that we prepared that we want to share with you. I have 4-year-old twin boys who love to keep me on my toes. They are the light of my world each day. My boys attended an in-home daycare, licensed daycare in Beatrice, where one of them was a victim of child abuse. I never thought that my family would be affected by child abuse. I thought it was something that just happened to other families or in the movies. I did not know the warning signs to watch for, or the fact that the majority of abuse happens to a child happens by a person they know and trust. I thought that since we surrounded our children with friends and family that we love and trusted, that they would be safe. I did not realize that my children were being harmed at their daycare. This was owned by a family friend who was supposed to be caring for them. My family's life has been changed forever. Searching for support and understanding, I contacted Monica Hall, who is the aunt of Juliet Gertz, who at the innocent age of 2 years old was beaten to death by her abusers in Gearing, Nebraska. This story particularly touches my heart, as Juliet, like my boys, is a twin. I could not imagine my life without one of my boys. I asked Monica Hall if there was something that we could do to help raise awareness of child abuse, and she responded with a link to the National Million March Against Child Abuse and suggested that my husband and I sign up. When I read what Million March Against Child Abuse was trying to accomplish, I knew that it was something that my family and I had to be a part of. The Million March Against Child Abuse is a nonpartisan, grassroots, nationwide effort that unites all child advocates in solidarity. The nationwide event has over 250,000 participants in over 300 cities throughout the United States. On April 22nd, citizens of our nation, organizations, associations, and agencies will all come together in a peaceful demonstration to raise awareness of crimes against children. Child abuse is 100% preventable, and children deserve to grow up happy, healthy, and free from fear. I quote Lily Tomlin, "I always wondered why somebody doesn't do something about that, and I realized I am somebody."
Good morning. I have been a resident of Beatrice most of my life. I have two boys, a very ornery and brave 1-year-old and a 4-year-old that is so smart he amazes me every day. I never thought my children would be affected by child abuse. I was wrong. Both of my children attended the same in-home licensed daycare as Lisa's, where abuse occurred. When Lisa approached me about becoming a co-lead for the Million March Against Child Abuse walk in Beatrice, I said yes to support my friend and to help be a voice for my son's friend as well as my own children. I did not realize taking the step would change my outlook on life forever. I wanted to educate myself, so I began to research statistics on child abuse and neglect. What I found was disturbing and frightening. Statistics like 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be a victim of child molestation by the age of 18, and the fact that 1,300 children suffer from shaken baby syndrome each year. However, the statistic that troubled me the most was that nearly 10 children die each day from child abuse and neglect. I began to follow Facebook pages for children who were murdered from child abuse and different organizations to help raise awareness for the cause. Soon, my news feed was flooded with with disheartening stories of children being hurt or killed by people they trusted most, people that should have been protecting them. I became overwhelmed and depressed when I would read stories of yet another angel lost. I wanted to help these children and families. I wanted to get the word out about terrible statistics and gut-wrenching cases of abuse. But how? I am only a mother from a little town in Nebraska. How could I help make a difference? That's when I understood the purpose of the Million March Against Child Abuse. With over 300 cities participating in 49 states, together we will stand to be a voice for all children. The citizens of this small town and all over the nation are coming together to raise awareness for child abuse and neglect. Together, we'll be a voice for the children, and together we will stand as a nation and make a change. Through the amazing support and participation of our community, the MACA Beatrice March will have roughly 150 participants at various times throughout the day on April 22nd. Out of the 605 MACA shirts sold nationwide, the MACA Beatrice March sold 85 shirts to our participants, the highest shirts sold nationwide. Our Facebook page for our local march has over 140 followers and continues to grow each day. The Million March Against Child Abuse will be an annual event across the nation as well as here in our community. Our nation's children are screaming out for help, and it's time we do something about it. I quote my son's favorite book, "Unless somebody cares a whole awful lot, nothing's going to get better. It's not." We are not standing before you today to ask for money or donations, but only for your endorsement and support for the first annual Million March Against Child Abuse. We need your support to give our nation's children a voice. And as our leader and Children Without a Voice chairman, Lynn Seahorn, said, never second-guess the power of a small group of people. Indeed, they will move mountains. The support of Beatrice has been overwhelming. We have secured St. John's parking lot for all supporters to park at during this event. We have permission from the Masonic Temple to have a booth and speakers and also to use their facilities. We have some wonderful speakers coming from the Child Advocacy Center as well as a local pastor from Beatrice. We are very excited to bring this nationwide event to Beatrice.
Talked with Roger. I don't believe we can officially endorse a project that's not specific to a county operation. Just letting them know that it's not county sponsored, not standing in the way of what you're doing. You're using a public sidewalk there. I just wrote some questions here. You've addressed the parking issue. On that particular day, there will still be the need for folks to come in and out of the courthouse to conduct regular business. We just ask for accommodations to allow people to do that. This is a public building. There'll be public access. Y'all are part of the public. That's fine. I don't believe we can officially endorse anything, but we definitely don't have to stand in your way. And I don't think there's any intent to do that. But we wanted to hear you, and your issue that you have there. The only concern we would have is obviously that's a main highway there, and if there's a lot of people, there's always a potential for distraction for people to look. And it's good that there's a high visibility there, but there comes with some level of concern with the traffic. Be aware of that. I'm not probably telling you anything you don't already know. I just wanted to state that. So good luck, I guess, if anybody has, I hope you have a good turnout.
It says you're going to do it from 7 to 5. Just a certain number of people each hour or a whole group? Or what are you looking at there?
It's kind of open. Anyone can come, they're welcome to come. You don't have to come all day. We do have power hours that we're planning between the lunch hour and then ending from 3:30 to 4:30.
Yeah, we could be the only two out there. We might have 100 people out there. I don't know. Hopefully we have, like I said, the Beatrice support has been overwhelming, and a lot of local businesses have decorated their windows, and a lot of businesses have donated as far as getting supplies and things like that. So we are very appreciative of all of that, and hopefully we can make a difference.
And please don't take my comments as not being appreciative of what you're doing. It's just formally as a board.
I understand.
Something, but I think it's worthwhile, and good luck. I hope you have a good turnout.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any more discussion?
I hope it's warm.
Yes. I hope it doesn't rain.
Thank you. All right. Last thing on the agenda, I need a motion. Let's see. Make sure I got everything. I jumped around a little bit. Last thing on the agenda, then I need a motion to go into closed session to discuss FOP and personnel. Then this is regarding the agreement with the Paternal Order of Police, the Sheriff's Deputy, to discuss, and then personnel issues related to the Highway Department. Necessary for the protection of the public interest or needless injury to the reputation of an individual.
Mark needs signatures.
Motion.
Made by Dorn.
Second.
Seconded by Setzer. Vote. 7-0. To go to closed session.
I'm sorry, he's got a lot to learn.
Ready? Okay, 12:36, need a motion to come out of executive session. Closed session. Moved by Byers, second by Setzer. Any more discussion? Seeing none, vote. All right, last thing. Yes.
Talked to Mark Mumford out in the hall. He's going to be in town Monday for dinner with Tobias. Didn't know if a meeting after that would work for.
Monday?
This coming Monday, for some of us to get together to start getting a plan for this bond, or
he wants to meet after the city council meeting?
No, he's meeting with Tobias over the noon hour.
I'll have to look. I don't know. I'll have to look. Can't speak to it right now. I'll be in town, but I don't know.
Or otherwise, pick a date. We need to set a meeting up with Mark. That's all. Let me put it that way.
So can we just shoot you dates? Email?
Yep. Oh, yeah. He was going to get a hold of you, man. Mm-hmm.
So if you got... I'm going to sit in on it, shoot Myron.
Yeah, does everybody... I mean, not everybody needs to be there, but we need to have... Yeah,
I don't know yet. I've got to check on doctor's appointments.
We've got to meet with him so we can start up.
Can Matt just shake Myron?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'll
send you some dates. Okay. Times, and I'll go back.
But hopefully next week. I mean, yeah, next week, period.
Yeah. Yeah. Earlier the better.
Earlier the better.
It's going to dry out.
Make sure you watch it.
Always is.
Oh.
I got you on record.
Make sure you watch quorum, so four of us. Yeah.
I mean, particularly where... You know, no matter what you do, you're going to be looked at as official, you know, and clearly it's something you support. But when you get into the political side of things, I know like the school bond issue, the Board of Education had to be oh so careful with that.
Yeah. Well, we treat it like a regular committee meeting and stay underneath our approved quorum, which is four, right?
You can still communicate with each other.
Yeah. And if there is communication, it needs to go board-wide, go through Don and...
Coffee shops.
No, don't do the coffee shop. Okay. Anything else for the good of the Board of Supervisors? Seeing none, we'll adjourn 12:38.